Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. In this audio, I'm going to cover Old Earth Creationism. Our context is this. I'm doing 5 introductory audios trying to prepare us for the creation account in Genesis 1 and 2. In the first audio, I gave a general introduction, not only to the creation account, but to the whole book of Genesis. In the second audio, introductory audio, I talked about what does day mean, the Hebrew word yom. In the third audio, I covered atheistic and theistic evolution. And this is the fourth audio in this series of 5 introductory audios, Old Earth Creationism. Now, here's a summary statement of Old Earth Creationism. It's a doctrine of creation that disagrees with evolutionists on every point except one, the age of the earth. The Old Earth Creationists believe that the earth is 4.5 billion or 4.6 billion years old, just like the evolutionists do. Now, here are some tenets that are common to all Old Earth Creationists. Not only is the earth about 4.5 billion years old, but nature in its present state got here by a combination of process and miracle. Now, evolutionists say that the creation of the earth was all process and no miracle. The theistic evolutionist says that there's a little bit of miracle at the very beginning in initial creation, but then from then on, it's all process. But not so with the Old Earth creationists. They have an old earth, but they've got creation taking part at various points in the timeline. And there's 2 types of Old Earth creationism. There's gap theory creationist. They're also known as ruin/reconstruction creationist. Their position is this. This is the so-called gap theory. There's billions of years, they say, between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. Let me read those 2 verses for you. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, period. Billion years go by, or 4.5 billion years goes by. Verse 2, now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Now what they say is that God created space, time, and matter in verse 1, the heavens and the earth, and then 4.5 billion years go by, and during that time, evolution occurred. Then we get to verse 2, now the earth was formless and empty. They translate that as became formless and empty. But why? Because of the rebellion of Satan and all the disaster of the nature that's red with tooth and claw and all the bad stuff happened, and then God had to recreate starting with Genesis 1:2. So the fossil record is created between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. The evolution of species occurred during that time. Satan fell during that gap. And so the pre-Adamic earth was destroyed at the end of the gap by a great cataclysm. This is when God threw Satan out of heaven. And so God had to start all over again in the Garden of Eden. And then the earth is recreated in 6 literal days. Now, the advantage of this position is that one who holds that theory doesn't have to argue about dating methods with evolutionists. He can say, fine, take your long age, put it between Genesis 1 and 2 and be happy. We're not going to bother you with it. But you leave me alone when I get to Genesis 1:2, and we talk about the straightforward literal reading. We don't have to make days, which means yom. Yom, which means 24-hour day, most 99% probably. So we'll take day as a 24-hour period, and we'll have a straightforward literal reading of the creation event, and we won't bother you evolutionist. Well, that's nice. Here's the disadvantages of the gap theory. It's difficult exegetically to make was and to become. In other words, when I read this, now the earth became formless and empty. That's what the gap theory people want to say. It became formless and empty because of the rebellion of Satan. But the problem with that is, I don't know Hebrew. I'm just taking people's words for this. It's hard to make was turn into become. I don't know Hebrew at all, much less well enough to debate that point. But from people who argue with the gap theory people, they say that this is difficult to do. It's was, not become. The earth did not become formless and void. It was when it was made. Another disadvantage of the gap theory position is that evolutionary geologists say chaos happened at the beginning of the geological record. That's the Precambrian place on the record. But the gap theories, the gappers say the chaos happened at the end of the geological record, the Pleistocene time. So they actually do contradict the evolutionist. They don't avoid all conflict with the evolutionist. And then they also, these gap theories, who are one form of a day-ager, they deny that death and decay came from the fall of Adam. Why? Because the fossil record shows struggle, violence, decay, and death before Adam in the gap, because Adam is created after Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, on down into the record on the 6th day. fossil record's already happened, and there's all kind of violence. So they have to believe in death before the fall, which we'll talk about in a minute. Adam had not fallen yet in the gap, so the bad stuff can't be blamed on Adam's fall. Problem with that is, in Romans 5, 12, and 14, Paul says that death, that sin, entered into the world through Adam, not the fall of Satan. Therefore, just as one man sin entered into the world, verse 14, nevertheless, death reigned from Adam. It's not the devil that gets the blame for that. It's Adam that gets the blame for that. Well, Adam occurred after the gap. Problem there. 1 Corinthians 15, 21 and 22 says this, for since by a man came death, by a man also came the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die. So this is a man, not Satan, but a man that brought death into the world. So that's a problem with the gap theory. Another problem is the gap theory denies that the earth was created good. Now, the earth is said to be created good 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times all the days of creation. Verse 4, verse 10, verse 12, verse 18, verse 21, and verse 25 of Genesis 1. And then the whole thing is summed up in verse 31. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. How can the world post-gap be good when it has already been subjected to ruin and catastrophe? How can you say it's good? Well, I guess you could say the recreation of it was good. So maybe that's not a killer objection to the theory. But overall, as you can see, the theory is very, very weak. And hardly anybody believes it anymore. But now the old earth creationists, as they go by that name today, the progressive creationists, or sometimes they're called, they are everywhere. They're a minority. Well, I can't say they're a minority. They are, let's put it this way, there's a lot of them. Old earthers, they're called. Here's a summary statement of the position. The Big Bang is true. The earth is 4.5, 4.6 billion years old. They get that by looking at the redshift of starlight. And the universe is about 15 billion years old. They get that from astrophysics. The progressive creationists say the days of creation are millions or a billion year old ages. And the ages overlap. They're not end to end. They say that death and bloodshed existed from the very beginning of creation and not after Adam's sin. So God created the world full of sin, full of death, full of struggle. Well, there's no sin because there's no Adam there yet, so they don't say that. But they say that there's death. Animal death before Adam got there, and bloodshed as animals were ripped into each other. But that's all part of the way God created nature. The progressive creationists say that Adam and Eve were created after most of the earth's history had passed. Billions of years go by, then right at the end of that long, long, long period, Adam and Eve get created. The progressive creationists tend to say that Noah's flood is local. They need to say that. Well, they don't have to say that. What they're trying to do is avoid the jumbling up of the geological record or the creation of the geological record by a catastrophic worldwide flood. They don't want to say that. They want to say that the geological strata built up gradually, geologically and gradually over long periods of time. And well, Noah's flood kind of interrupts that gradual, peaceful progress. And so a lot of progressive creationists thus opt for a local flood, saying that the flood only occurred there in the Mesopotamian Valley. It did not occur worldwide. Now, that's an interesting story in itself. We'll get to that when we get to the flood story in Genesis. I think that's chapter 9, if I remember correctly, somewhere around there. Now, if an old earth progressive creationist believes in the universal flood, it's a universal tranquil flood. It's not catastrophic. I don't know how in the world you can say a universal flood is not catastrophic. I don't want to ever see one like that. But again, that's a weakness in their position, in my opinion. They say that different kinds of life forms did not evolve. They were specially created ex nihilo from nothing at different stages in the history of the earth. And these stages are described in some way by the days of Genesis. Well, that's a summary statement of the position. Now we'll look at how old earth creationists, progressive creationists, how they reconcile what I just told you with the 7 days of Genesis. Well, they use the day-age theory of Genesis, which I've talked about in great detail in my audio number 2 in the introductory series here. What does day mean? What does yom mean? Just briefly, I gave a lot more arguments than this, but let me just give you one. They say that yom is sometimes used for a period of time longer than 24 hours. For example, in Genesis 2:4, this is the history of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that the Lord God made the earth and heavens. See there, day is not a 24-hour day there. Can't be, because it's referring to the whole 7 days. Yeah, well, that's nice, but the problem is the word day there is not yom, it's biyom. So they're not even using the same word. Here's another verse they often like to use, Psalm 94. For 1,000 years in thy sight are like yesterday when it passes by, or as a watch in the night. And that verse is quoted by Peter. That is the most misused verse in the Bible. It's misused by futurist eschatology advocates, and it's also misused by old earth creationists. First of all, let's note in that Psalm chapter 90, verse 4, the word yom, day, is not used. And the point is that it doesn't say that a day is 1,000 years. It just says, in God's sight, it's like 1,000 years. It says yesterday instead of day. Well, that's okay. We'll take yesterday. Yesterday is not a 24-hour period. Well, actually, it is a 24-hour period in God's sight. And so you can't even say that day there is referring to a period longer than 24 hours. It's definitely not saying that Yom is 1,000 years, because it's saying it's different than 1,000 years. But Genesis 1, this verse here, Psalm 90, verse 4, is interested in how God reckons time, but Genesis 1 is not interested in how God reckons time. Genesis 1 is trying to convey to humans how long creation took. And so God is using human time. So goes the anti-old earth creationist view. All right, but that's how the day agers, the old earth creationists, the progressive creationists, that's how they treat the days of Genesis as long periods of time. That's how they get that 4.5 billion years of earth history. The old earthers like to quote other non-evolutionist interpreters who have no motive to oppose Darwin, because Darwin didn't exist when they wrote. They also believed in long ages. Now, this is a strong argument. You know, people love to argue from church history. Josephus believed that the days were long ages. Irenaeus, Lyon, 2nd century, day ages, not 24 hours. Origen, who also believed that God was round, if I remember correctly. Or was it Adam? And I can't remember what he believed. He believed a lot of nutty stuff. He was hardly orthodox, in my humble opinion. 3rd century, well, he believed in day ages. Augustine, of course, is a little bit more credible, even though he believed that sex was evil and that when sin, my mother conceived me, was the sex act, and that's why we got conceived. He wasn't right on everything. He believed in the day-age theory. And then, of course, the great Thomas Aquinas also believed in the day-age theory. Okay, we'll give him that. Now, sometimes progressive creationists use a literary framework view, and you can break this theory out into a different section from the long ages, because literary framework people believe that the day doesn't refer to any time at all. 24 hours a long age. It says that Genesis has nothing to do with the age of the earth. Because Genesis wasn't meant to be telling us what happened scientifically. It is merely a literary device to tell us that creation was a complete or perfect work. Well, the problem with that is Jesus and Paul thought Adam was a real person. Remember when Paul said sin entered into the world through Adam? He was thinking about a real person. Jesus had said in the beginning was not so. Man leaves his mother and cleaves to his wife. Also, another problem with saying that Genesis is poetry is that it's not poetry. It doesn't match Hebrew poetry. There's no balanced couplets like in typical Hebrew poetry. There's no parallelism. For example, in Genesis 4:23, for I have slain a man for wounding me and a young man for bruising me. Wounding and bruising are parallel. You don't have that in Genesis 1 and 2. Genesis 1 is integrated with the historical style of Genesis 2-11. That's the story of the antediluvian folks like Noah. And that's history. That's not poetry. All you got to do is look at the poetry of other that describe other creation accounts and see the difference. For example, Job 38, 4 through 14, Psalm 104, and Isaiah 40, 21 through 31, you can read about creation. And it's definitely poetry. It's very easy to see the difference. Another problem with this literary framework idea is, where's the logical stopping point in your demythologizing process? Do we end up denying the existence of that of which Jesus and the apostles declared to exist? Adam and Eve, Noah and the flood? Jesus mentioned Noah and the flood in Olivet Discourse. Oh, was that just a myth? I mean, I thought we weren't liberals. I thought evangelicals weren't liberals. Well, framework people are getting awful close. Now let's look at some of the advantage of the old earth creationist view. Well, first of all, of course, they don't have to dispute evolutionists concerning the age of the earth. They have a good general agreement between Genesis 1 and geology. The atmosphere comes first, dry land comes next, plant life comes after that, then you got increasingly complex forms of animal life after that, and then man is created last. And that sounds like a somewhat of a evolutionary progression there. But their big disadvantage is, it is so hard to prove linguistically that yom, day, means a long period of time. I spent a whole bunch of time dealing with that in my second audio in this introductory series. And folks, I'd hate to have to defend that idea in court, that yom means a long period of time. The evidence is overwhelmingly in favor of 24-hour days. I've read the Long Ager's arguments about yom, and every time I read one of their arguments, I cringe. I said, boy, I'd hate to defend that in court. There's no jury in the world that's going to believe that. All right, that's one disadvantage, is the definition of yom. The second disadvantage of the old earth creationist is that that view has sin and death occurring before the fall of Adam. That's the same problem that the gap theory had. Why? Because Adam is created at the very end of day six, and if you've got millions and hundreds of millions of years in days one through six, obviously that's where the fossil record is, that's where the death is, that's where the animals are eating each other. Nature red with tooth and claw, and then all of a sudden you got Adam. Well, that means all that killing of animals happened before Adam sinned. Therefore, you got death before sin. Logically, you would think that death would come after sin. Well, now here's the progressive creationist, the old earth creationist defense. They say that Adam's fall resulted in spiritual death, not physical death. The penalty was immediate, and Adam didn't immediately die. Therefore, the death had to be spiritual because physical death didn't happen. In Genesis 2:17, in the day you eat of the fruit, you must surely die. Well, they didn't die the day they ate the fruit, so obviously God was talking about spiritual death. I'll tackle that argument when we get later on in this audio, but that's kind of how the argument runs. And then they also say plant life had to die in the pristine garden for Adam and Eve to eat, and that's quite true. The young earthers say, well, plant life ain't dying. That's just withering or going away, but it's not dying. We'll talk about that a little bit later, too. And the progressive creationists say on the young earth creationist view, a big fish would not be able to eat a little fish in the pristine garden because that would mean death. And young earthers don't believe that death occurred before Adam fell. So therefore, you would have a bunch of fish running around not eating each other and just multiplying. Another argument that the progressive creationists use is, why would animals with sharp claws and teeth have them except to kill and eat? And of course, my answer to that is, well, you can have sharp claws and teeth to pull roots out of the ground, to chomp down on heavy leaves. I'm not sure that's such a good argument. But anyway, that gives you a sneak preview of some defense about the sin before the fall argument problem that the old earth creationists have. All right. So going back to the disadvantages now. Number one, yom seems to mean 24-hour day, not long ages. Disadvantage number two, sin and death occurs before the fall of Adam under the old earth view. Here's disadvantage number three. The days of Genesis don't match up with the evolutionary theory precisely. Now here's some examples of the contradiction with the evolutionary sequence that Genesis provides us. For example, plants are created on the third day and animals are created on days five and six. But evolution has flowering plants at a very recent period of time in the biological record. But old earth creationists in the book of Genesis has plants early on in the sequence. Genesis has fish and birds created on day five before the reptiles and insects were created on day six. Well, guess what? That's backwards from evolution. Evolution has the reptiles first, you know, climbing out of the primordial soup, the lizards, whatever they are, you know, the stuff comes out. The reptiles are early on. Fish and birds come late because they're complicated. That contradicts evolution. Genesis does. The order of the Genesis days. Here's another contradiction. In Genesis, the first creatures mentioned specifically are birds and whales. The first creatures are birds and whales. Those are some of the most complex animals there are. They should come at the end of the evolutionary process, not at the beginning. Genesis has trees and vegetation created on day three. The sun, moon, and the stars are created on day four. Well, typically, evolutionists have the stars, the planets being in existence before human life started evolving, trees and vegetation. Backwards, Genesis has it. And Genesis has fruit trees created on day three, fish created on day five. Evolution has fish being pretty early in the evolutionary chain and fruit trees relatively late. So that's a big problem there. There's also logical problems with the sequence of the days. Plant life is created on day three, and then the sun is created on day four. That would mean that plants would have to live hundreds of millions of years before the sun got created. How can a plant live that long with no sun? Here's another logical problem. Vegetation is created on day three. Vegetation depends on pollination from birds. But birds are not created till day five, which is 200 million years, say. Hundreds of millions of years later, how is vegetation going to survive without pollination? The insects are created on day six. That's another 100 million years or so, and vegetation needs insects for pollinization. Now, here's someone, a young earther, and I've unfortunately forgot to note him down as to who it is, but this is his quote. Ross, he's referring to Hugh Ross, the most prominent old earth creationist there is. Ross repeatedly shuffles the events of creation to claim that those events that occurred on different days did not occur, while those events that occurred on the same day actually happened at different times. In other words, he's got to do some prestidigitation to handle the sequencing problems. He's got to use some sleight of hand. He's got to suck some air. So there's another big disadvantage of the old earth theory. All right, so the three disadvantages. Yom means 24 hours, most probably. The second disadvantage is sin and death occur before the fall. And the third disadvantage is the sequencing of the days in Genesis don't match up with the theory of evolution. Now, I'm going to take one of those problems, the death before the fall problem, because to me, this is the weakest link, the weakest argument that old earth creationists have. So let's look at it. I'm going to give you several old earth creationist arguments that death occurred in the billions of years before Adam fell. Now, even though that it sounds ludicrous at first to think that death is in the world before Adam fell, actually they make a sophisticated argument. I will give you seven reasons why that might be true. Now, I don't believe it's true. I have a hard time buying these arguments, but I'm going to give them to you to show that they have thought about the problem. First argument. Romans 5:12 refers only to the spiritual death of humans, not the death of animals or plants. Romans 5:12 says this, therefore, just as sin entered the world through one man and death through sin, in this way death spread to all people because all sinned. Now, young earth creationists say, well, see there, death came through sin, so that means animals couldn't have died before Adam died because death came through sin. Therefore, there was no death before Adam sinned. Therefore, all that fossil record can't refer to billions of years. Well, the old earth people say, well, no. Romans 5:12 refers to spiritual death, not animal death. The Greek word thanatos, which is death, says one old earther, Dr. Wilde, W-I-L-E, I don't know him. I got him off the internet. He says, thanatos, when used as a personification, generally means spiritual death. Well, here in our passage, Romans 5:12, death is personified as a king. If we go down to verse 14 in Romans 5, nevertheless, death reigned. So there's your personification. Death looks like a king ruling from Adam to Moses. And so therefore, it must be spiritual death. Well, the young earth creationist can answer that, but say, look, the claim is that death, when personified, only generally means spiritual death. That doesn't mean all the time. And plus, the verse says sin entered the world. Well, the world would include natural creation and animals, would it not? So that's why animals kill each other, is because of the sin of Adam. Therefore, the long age theory doesn't work, because you got 4.5 billion years of animals killing each other before Adam shows up. Well, the old earth creationist comeback, possibly, from that is, look, natural creation and animals cannot sin. Paul is talking about humans, because he said sin entered the world. Well, animals don't sin, so he's talking about sin entered the world of humans, not entered the natural world of creation. Well, even given all the old earth creationists, their argument here, all this does is says that death, spiritual death does occur because of Adam's sin, but it still leaves open as to when the death of animals happened. It doesn't prove anything. In other words, that's a defensive argument, trying to, you know, stay alive for another argument. The old earth creationists have to do that with this verse. And I will give you a heads up. Sin entered the world, death through sin. And then you look in Genesis 3, I think it's verse 19. It says, and Adam returned to dust, which shows that Adam died physically because of sin, not just spiritually. He died physically. So that's a weak argument for the old earth creationist here. Second argument for the old earth creationist. Plants are eaten before the fall. So there's death before the fall. Now, the young earth creationists grant that plants were eaten before the fall. You have to, because it says that in Genesis 1:29 and 30. God also said, look, I have given you every seed-bearing plant on the surface of the entire earth and every tree whose fruit contains seed. This will be food for you, Adam. For all the wildlife of the earth, for every bird of the sky, and for every creature that crawls on the earth, everything having the breath of life in it, I have given every green plant for food. So the beast have green plants. And so the young earth creationists say that, yeah, plants were eaten, but that's not death because you notice it says all the wildlife of the earth, everything having the breath of life in it. And so we'll see that that's a key argument in the young earthers' view of death. Plants don't have the breath of life, but animals do. And so they die. They die, but plants don't die. They just wither. One young earth creationist, Turpin, from Answers in Genesis, says plants don't die. They just wither. All right. So let me repeat this second argument. Old earth creationists say that plants are eaten before the fall. Therefore, plants die, so there's death before the fall of Adam. And young earth creationists, you have to admit that, because Genesis 1:29-30 says that. Well, the young earth creationists respond and say, no, plants don't die. In the Old Testament, death is the permanent cessation of breathing. Remember in our verse here, in verse Genesis 1, verse 30, when God gives all the wildlife of the earth green plants, he says, all the wildlife, everything having the breath of life in it, that's how they live. They're animals that have the breath of life. In the Old Testament, say the young earthers, death is the permanent cessation of breathing. For example, in Job 34:14-15, if he put his mind to it and withdrew the spirit and breath he gave, every living thing would perish together, and mankind would return to the dust. So there, the lack of spirit, the lack of breath, the lack of ruach, if it's gone, then there's death. Psalm 104:29, when you hide your face, they are terrified. When you take away their breath, they die and return to the dust. So that's how you die in the Old Testament, when your breath's taken away. A plant doesn't have his breath taken away. Psalm 146, verse 4, when his breath leaves him, he returns to the ground. On that day, his plants die. He returns to the ground, means he's buried in the grave. When his breath leaves him. Now, that sounds pretty good. The old earth creationists have a comeback, though. They say, wait a minute, there is one place, Job 14:8, where a plant is said to die, which is where plants are said to die. Job 14:8, if its roots grow old in the ground and its stump starts to die in the soil, is referring to a tree stump, and its stump starts to die in the soil, there you have a stump dying, so therefore you do have death of a plant, therefore plants can be said to die. Young earth creationists come back to that is Job's stump didn't die. If you drop down to the next verse, Job 14:9, you read this, the scent of water makes it thrive and produce twigs like a sapling. Well, that gets to be a fine argument. Even if the old earth creationists prove that plants die before the fall, that doesn't prove that animals die before the fall. That just leaves open the possibility that life disappears before the fall, but it doesn't prove that animals die before the fall. Third old earth argument, animals were designed by God to kill. So you look in the fossil record, you see animals with these claws and these beaks, sharp teeth and so forth. What did God put them there for, except to kill other animals? Well, I haven't read this in the literature anywhere, but this is off the top of my head. Take it with a grain of salt, if you would. But you know, sharp teeth and claws are just as good for tearing plants as they are for killing animals. So I don't think that proves anything, in my humble opinion. Fourth old earth argument, long age argument, the Genesis 2:17 argument about death. Genesis 2:17 says this, but you must not eat, says God. You, Adam, must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for on the day you eat from it, you will certainly die. I mentioned this earlier. On the day you eat from it, well, Adam and Eve did not physically die on the day that they ate. So therefore, the death that occurred after Adam's sin had to be spiritual death only, a separation from God, not physical death, the cessation of breath. Well, as I mentioned earlier, and I'll mention it again, that the obvious comeback to that on the part of the young earth creationist is Genesis 3:19. You will eat bread by the sweat of your brow until you return to the ground. This is referring to the curse because of the sin, since you were taken from it, for you are dust and you will return to dust. In other words, you're going to die. You're going to die because of your sin. Physical death, not spiritual death. So I really think the old earth creationists are sucking air on that one. Here's the fifth old earth creationist argument. God created Adam mortal. He was meant to die physically when he was created, not spiritually, but he was meant to die physically. The way we know that is because God put the tree of life in the Garden of Eden so Adam could eat it and become immortal, but he was created mortal. The implication for this is that if he's created mortal, he could have died before he sinned, and therefore you got death before the fall. Well, first of all, that's an argument from silence. You know, we don't know how God created Adam mortally immortal. God doesn't say. But think about it logically. This is what a young earth creationer would say. Death is the very opposite of God's life. How can you say that death is good? Everybody hates death. So why would God create a very good Adam just to have him die? Because remember, the seventh day, God looked at all the creation, or at the end of the sixth day, God looked at all the creation and said, it's very good. All of the first 6 days of creation is very good, including Adam. If it's very good, why would God's creation include death? Because death is not very good. Argument number 6 for the old earthers. Idyllic conditions did not exist outside the Garden of Eden. So if you say, okay, inside the garden, you got all this wonderful stuff. No animals are killing each other. Everything's beautiful. Everything's wonderful. No sin until Adam sinned. And that's fine. There's no sin in the garden because Adam had not sinned yet. But there's outside the garden, there's billions and billions of years of sin and death and natural selection and animals chomping up on each other. Well, folks, I think that's a weak argument. The young earth creationists can come back to that and say, look, God said created things were good 6 times. And at the end of the whole creation, at the end of the process, he said all of creation was, quote unquote, very good. Was he referring to the Garden of Eden when he said that? He was referring to all creation, the sun, the moon, the stars, the plants, the vegetation. Sun and moon and stars weren't in the Garden of Eden. It's the whole earth, the whole world, the whole heavens and earth, not just the Garden of Eden. All of it was very good. If you say that God created it full of death and spoilation, natural selection, you got a problem. Here's argument number 7 for the old earth creationist. God charged humanity to, quote unquote, subdue the earth, which shows that creation is not safe. Just like you have to subdue a robber, well, you got to subdue the earth. That shows that creation was not safe. Therefore, there must have been death in there. There must have been tigers attacking people. This was after Adam was created, before he fell. He was told to subdue the earth. And since the earth had to be subdued, the earth must have been red with tooth and claw. There must have been death before the fall. That subdue phrase is used in Genesis 1:28. God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and every creature that crawls on the earth. Here's the answer to that. Look, I can rule my dog. I can subdue my dog and I'm not in any danger. I say, don't pee on the bedspread. Don't eat my plants. Don't bark at the little kids. But I'm not in danger from the dog. Now, some dogs you would be in danger with, I mean, no question. But it doesn't necessarily mean that because you're subduing the dog that you're in danger from the dog. And just because God said subdue the earth and rule the earth, I mean, he says subdue the earth, rule the fish of the sea. Are we really supposed to be scared of the fish, of the bass and the trout that are in the sea? Maybe a whale, maybe, but not a fish. The birds of the sky? How many humans do you know are afraid of the birds of the sky? Oh, there's some that might give you a problem. But come on. That is a weak argument. All right, there are 7 arguments, and I've dumped on them pretty good as I've gone through. And I really do believe that this is the old earth creationist Achilles heel. This is the weakest part. And again, remember, I said previously, and I say this all the time, when you get to a controversial argument about anything, not just theology, what you need to look at is the weakest spot in that system and see how well the defenders of that system can defend their weak spot. Now, young earth creationists, they have their weak spot too, but I'm talking about old earth creationists in this audio, and I've just given you their weak spot, which is they believe that death comes before sin. I've mentioned some other disadvantages, but their big one is they say that death comes before sin. And folks, there's 7 arguments that I've come up with, in my opinion, can be knocked down fairly easily. Now, let's look at some counter young earth creation arguments that say that death had to have occurred after Adam fell. Number 1 argument, creation is said to be good after 6 days, 6 times, and very good at the very end. I've already mentioned this. How could a very good creation include struggle, pain, and death? That's a strong argument. 2nd argument, Adam's death resulted from the curse, not creation. I've mentioned this earlier. Let me read this, Genesis 3:17-19. And he said to the man, because you listened to your wife and ate from the tree about which I commanded you, do not eat from it. The ground is cursed because of you. You will eat from it by means of painful labor all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. You will eat bread by the sweat of your brow until you return to the ground, since you were taken from it. For you are dust, and you will return to dust. You're going to die, Adam. And so that implies very strongly that Adam was not created to die. He died because of the curse. Right there in the passage, it talks about how everything got bad now. The ground got cursed, the thorns and the thistles, the sweat of the brow and all that. Right in the middle of that, at the end of that, you're going to die. You're going to return. So that shows that the curse creates death. Not God creating death, but Adam's sin created death, created his own death. So that's a pretty strong argument for the unearthed creationist. Argument number three, Isaiah's new heavens and new earth didn't have animal death in it. So if paradise restored doesn't have animal death, why should the original paradise, Eden, or the earth, the pristine earth, why should it have animal death? All right, let's look at Isaiah 11:6-9. Now, let me say this. I would not use this argument because I believe that Isaiah is using symbolic references to talk about the new covenant, not talking about a recreated heavens and earth at the end of time. But a lot of futurists do believe it that way, and young earth creationists tend to be futurists, which I'm not. So let's, just for the sake of argument, let's just assume that Isaiah is talking about a new heavens and a new earth where things are changed. Isaiah 11:6-9. In other words, let's take Isaiah literally here, even though I don't think he means to be literal, but let's take him that way. Verse 6, the wolf will dwell with the lamb, and the leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf, the young lion, and the fattened calf will be together, and a child will lead them. The cow and the bear will graze. Their young ones will lie down together. And the lion will eat straw like cattle. An infant will play beside the cobra's pit, and a toddler will put his hand into a snake's den, assumingly, and not get bit, presumably. They will not harm or destroy each other on my entire holy mountain, for the land will be as full of the knowledge of the Lord as the sea is filled with water. Full of the knowledge of the Lord, that's why I think it's referring to the new covenant. And Isaiah, in my opinion, is talking about an idyllic situation where animals don't hurt each other. Now, whether you take that literally or symbolically, the point is that when things are put right again and sin is dealt with, animals don't hurt each other. Whichever view you take of Isaiah 11. And there's also a lot other passages to it in Isaiah 11. Where is it? Isaiah 65, I think it is. But this is enough for right now. Whatever position you take on this, whether it's literal or metaphorical, the point is that paradise, in a world without sin, you don't have animals hurting each other. So if you don't have animals hurting each other in the projected state in the future, why would you have animals hurting each other in the original paradisical state where there was no sin? But old earth will say, oh yeah, the animals are ripping each other up before their sin. That's the argument number three. Argument number four, pre-fall humans were vegetarian. They only ate vegetables. They didn't eat animals. Therefore, there was no death before Adam. Before Adam fell. No death before Adam's fall. No animal death. Now, here is the scripture that is quoted to back that up, that pre-fall humans were vegetarian. Genesis 1:29-30. God also said, look, I have given you every seed-bearing plant on the surface of the entire earth and every tree whose fruit contains seed. This will be food for you, Adam, humans, for all the wildlife of the earth, for every bird of the sky, and for every creature that crawls on the earth, everything having the breath of life in it, that's the animals and the birds, I've given every green plant for food. So humans ate plants. Animals and birds ate plants. They didn't eat animals. They didn't eat each other. Therefore, there's no animal death before the fall. Now, old earthers argue against that. They say, look, just because humans and animals ate vegetables in Genesis 1:29-30, that doesn't necessarily mean that humans and animals didn't eat meat. Eating the meat may have not been recorded. Well, come back to that is, the young earth creationist come back to that is, that's a classic argument from silence. And arguments from silence are weak. Now, sometimes you can use them if the silence is deafening, but the silence is not deafening here. Just because they didn't mention that animals were eaten somewhere else, doesn't make it so. Now, to be fair, it's also an argument from silence on the young earth creationist point of view too, because they say, see here, since animals and people are eating only vegetables here, therefore they don't eat meat. Well, it doesn't say they don't eat meat. So it's an argument from silence either way. But what's most likely? God says, I've given you all these plants to eat. Why would he not say, I've given you the animals to eat? Argument number five from the young earth creationist. The earth was subjected to futility. So it wasn't created that way. If the earth is subjected to futility, it had to be not subjected to futility when it was created. Here's the scripture, Romans 8, 20 and 21, verses 20 through 21. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, God, in the hope that the creation itself will also be set free from the bondage to decay into the glorious freedom of God's children. So the creation itself is going to be set free from the bondage to decay. It's going to be changed to a more pristine state, or to a more glorious state. Well, that means that the earth must have been created clean, pure, without death, without futility, without animals eating each other. If it's going to be set free from bondage, there has to be some kind of bondage in nature. There has to be something bad, kind of like the death of animals. Argument number 6 from the young earth creationist. If the death of animals is a part of God's good creation, I say quote unquote good, 6 times good, 7th time very good. If the death of those animals in God's creation is a part of, if death is considered to be a part of a good creation, well, why be kind to animals? Why not kill them? Death is good. Nothing wrong with it. So let's kill them. Exodus 23:12, first part of the verse. Do your work for 6 days, but rest on the 7th day so that your ox and your donkey may rest. The Old Testament law says be kind to animals. Proverbs 12:10, the righteous cares about his animal's health. The righteous cares about his animal's health. That's why you give your dogs rabies shots and parvo. I forgot the name of that shot that you give your dogs. You care for your animals. But wait a minute. If the death of animals is a good thing, why not just not take care of animals? It doesn't seem to matter too much. Argument number 7. Jesus was outraged. This is argument number 7 on the part of the young earth creationist who say that the 6 days of Genesis are literal 24-hour days. Argument number 7. Jesus was outraged over physical death, so how can death be part of a good creation? John 11:33, we read this. When Jesus saw her, when he saw Mary, Lazarus' sister, crying because Lazarus had died, and the Jews who had come with her crying, he was deeply moved in his spirit and troubled. 2 verses later, it says Jesus wept. He's crying. He's moved in his spirit and his trouble when he saw death. Well, wait a minute. I thought death was part of the good creation. No, death is evil. Of course, that's human death. You might say you don't cry over animals dying. And so that therefore, a death of an animal can be a good thing. In my humble opinion, it is a bad thing when a loved animal dies. I mean, I had a dog named Oliver got ate up by a pit bull. My dog defended 2 other dogs' lives, saved their lives. He died a hero. He's gashed up, bitten up. He's shaking. He's in shock. He's looking at the bottom of the stairs trying. He wants to come up to the stairs to get in the house. He looks at me, and I look at him, and I knew he was dead. I knew he was gone. And I had to shut the door on him and go to sleep that night. I'll never forget it as long as I live. Don't tell me death is good. Don't tell me death of animals is good. That last reason is probably why I don't believe in old earth creationism, because of my dog getting killed by another dog. Nature red with tooth and claw. And you're telling me that would have happened before Adam fell? I do not believe that. Ladies and gentlemen, I was trying to be objective. I don't know how objective I was. I hope you enjoy this audio as we prepare to go to the next audio, which will be about young earth creationism. And they've got their weaknesses too. I'll bring them out as we go through that. I hope you stay tuned for that audio. I hope you enjoyed this one.